Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it seems to be just me tonight. So far, this is Sean Palmer on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. And I hope that we will be joined by my co-host, Seth Kamens, who is currently on a bus back from New Jersey. And you know how those buses are at the Lincoln Tunnel, so hopefully we'll be here at some time soon, probably around 7:15. And it's cold outside New York, so I am curled up on the couch with the phone in my hand and hoping that we have a couple of listeners out there waiting to hear my epiphanies that go on about the sports world. Tonight, there aren't really all that many, and I can't even take calls because right now I don't even have a computer set up, just my phone, waiting for Seth to log in so he can take your calls at 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846, but I can get emails. So if you'd like to email me at sethandseansports@gmail.com, that's Seth, A-N-D, Sean, S-E-A-N, sports@gmail.com, or at Seth and Sean on Twitter. We are always available via every social medium, Facebook included, Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. So if you listen to our show and are the weekly listeners here on the show, you knew that Seth and I went down to beautiful College Park, Maryland this past weekend, and it is beautiful. I mean, people say that about certain college campuses. I can tell you that there are certain college campuses which I have been to that are absolutely exquisite. Miami of Ohio and Oxford, Ohio. Beautiful campus. Probably the most beautiful campus I've ever been to. Syracuse University. Really not all that beautiful. Got to tell you. And I spent 7 years there, especially in the cold weather months. Just not a beautiful campus. I mean, it has beautiful buildings. It has a good basketball team, football team. You could tolerate them these days, but not a beautiful campus. College Park, Maryland, one absolutely gorgeous campus. Took a walk around it. Seth was my tour guide. He spent a good 4 years there, another 8 in Washington, D.C. Beautiful campus, learned a lot, had a beautiful sandwich, a very nice sandwich, a gyro, if you will, at Marathon Deli, which happens to be Seth's favorite place. And, you know what, went to Bird Stadium and watched the Syracuse Orange put an ass-whipping on those Maryland Terrapins. Due to that, and due to the fact that my buddy Scott Malky, who came with me to the game, and I love seeing Scott and his family, Tracy, Van, Zach, two beautiful kids, he asked me specifically to hear the fight song today. And granted, we generally would want Seth to sing the fight song, and the reason for that is simple. Well, his team lost, so he should have to sing the fight song, but he wouldn't even know the Syracuse fight song. And even if I gave him the words, I'm sure he wouldn't get the tune right. So it's up to me. It's up to the Syracuse University marching band alumnus, Sean Palmer, to sing you the Syracuse fight song. So here we go. Down, down the field goes a Syracuse. Watch his backs hit the line and go through. Hey, down, down the field we go marching, fighting for the orange, stretch and chew. Rah, 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 victory's in sight for a Syracuse. His loyal sons know the Terrapins will lose. So we'll fight, yes, we'll fight, and with all our might, for the glory of old Syracuse, the whole Syracuse. Go fight and win. Damn it. And did they win? It was an ugly game. Gotta tell you the truth. Ugly game. But at the same time, yeah. We'll take home our fifth victory. Going into our matchup against the Florida State Seminoles. And it's funny because Seth is trying to call in. Unfortunately, Seth, I don't have the access to let you in because I'm not actually on the internet. So I'm going to text him right now. Don't have access to website to call. Oh, but it looks like Anthony Movelli is logged in. So, Anthony, would you like to play your fantasy football shindig and at this time? And then we will get Seth on the horn. So why don't you do that? Anthony, if you're listening right now, that would be great. Why don't you play that?
Anthony Mobile, host of the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, which airs every Thursday night at 7 p.m. and is brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. I'm here to give you the fantasy follow-up for Week 10 and a look ahead to your Week 11 matchup, so listen up in order to win this weekend's games. Quarterback injuries headline the NFL this weekend as three starters left their games with concerns. Peyton Manning received an MRI, and owners can stop holding their breath as he will be fine. Jay Cutler came back too early from his groin injury and now suffered another setback with a sprained ankle. He's already been ruled out for Week 11, and the Bears will make sure not to rush him back next time, so he can't be counted on anytime soon. Jake Locker suffered a fractured foot and will miss the rest of the season. Ryan Fitzpatrick will take over at quarterback for the Titans, but isn't worth an ad in standard leagues. With Doug Martin already ruled out for the season, rookie running back Mike James has been impressive in limited time, but fractured his ankle in Monday night's win, leaving the Bucs with a committee approach between Brian Leonard and Bobby Rainey. If you're desperate, Leonard is probably the player to own, but with the bye weeks almost over, neither guy should be starting on any team. Andre Brown becomes another savvy add at the running back position. As long as he can stay healthy, he'll be a top 20 running back play for the streaking Giants after running for 115 yards and a touchdown against Oakland. Tavon Austin, the highly touted rookie wide receiver, finally broke out this week with 314 total yards and three touchdowns in a big upset against the Colts. However, he only saw action on 15 snaps and shouldn't be counted on moving forward. Let someone else waste their waiver wire spot on this mirage. Nick Foles once again impressed and now has 16 touchdowns and zero interceptions on the season. With an extremely favorable schedule, Foles becomes a top quarterback play for the rest of the year and needs to be picked up in all formats. My plays of the week, in the midst of a very disappointing fantasy season, this becomes the week that Ray Rice breaks out and makes good on his first-round value. Against an overrated Chicago Bears defense, Rice will have plenty of opportunity to fill up the stat sheet and should see plenty of work in the receiving game as well. Another disappointing fantasy player who will make up for his subpar performance all year, Larry Fitzgerald. Carson Palmer is a much better quarterback when he has time to throw in the pocket, and Jacksonville's weak pass rush plays perfectly into this strength. With Michael Floyd ailing, the Cardinals will rely on Fitz to have a huge day. My benching of the week. Tom Brady has struggled all season and now faces a Carolina defense who's been healthy and dominant in the last 5 weeks. If you have a better option, leave Brady on your bench and avoid the frustration that he has been causing all season long. Another benching this week, Fred Jackson against the Jets. Spiller is slowly coming back to full strength, and Jackson will struggle against a dominant Jets front seven, even with EJ Manuel back at quarterback. The passing game is practically non-existent, and the Jets will focus on shutting down the Bills' biggest weapon this year, Jackson and the running game. Look elsewhere if possible. This is Anthony Mobile with your Week 10 Fantasy Follow-Up, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com and the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, airing on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Make sure to tune in and follow us on Facebook to send in all your questions. Thanks for listening, and best of luck in your games this weekend. Take it to the house.
And thank you to Anthony. That was fantastic. Even more so, it took up 3 minutes of my time where I didn't have to speak. So when you think about it that way, not a bad deal. So we're waiting for Seth to join us. It seems like in that nice little break, I gave Seth the number. Anthony is manning the switchboard. Thank you very much, Anthony Movelli, for helping us out tonight. It is so greatly appreciated. And speaking of which, well, I'll go through our – Seth and I have a fantasy football league, and right now we are in the midst of a crisis, if you will. So Jay Cutler's on the bench because he tore his groin, injured his ankle, hurt his elbow, broke his wrist, a couple of fingers here and there, and maybe tweaked an ear. It seems like everything about him is hurt right now. We have Tony Romo on the bench because he's on a bye week, and he'd actually play better than Cutler right now. So our two top quarterbacks right now are Christian Ponder, all of 147 yards last week, and Alex Smith, all of, I don't know, maybe 147 yards the week before, and he goes up against Denver. So help! We have to play two quarterbacks in this league. Help! And it looks like we're going to wind up picking up Ryan Fitzpatrick and the quarterback for the Packers. Not sure who that is. Seth, do you remember his name?
Scott Tolzien. I think he played at Wisconsin.
Yeah, Everybody say hello to Seth. If you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846. Anthony, thank you so much for manning the switchboard tonight. And so how's the bus?
I hate it. sorry for the delay, everybody. I had a meeting that was supposed to go an hour, went 2.5, and suddenly I was stuck on a bus coming through the Lincoln Tunnel at 5 o'clock or 5:30 at night. Not great. But I am here.
I gave you a reprieve. I sang the fight song. So you don't have to sing it. I sang it for you. I just like to hear the final score out of your mouth. What was the final score?
I want to say Syracuse 20-3.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, that's all I needed to hear. It was just a very poor played game, but I did give the College Park campus quite an impressive rating. It is a beautiful campus, no question about it. Well above what you get at Syracuse University.
It is a great place to go to school. Great going back to Marathon Deli. Great drinking a few beers out in Mont 1. We also, to be perfectly honest, we got a really nice day for it until about 7 o'clock. It was gorgeous. Too bad more of my friends couldn't show up, but it was good to see Dave Schell and a couple other people that I hadn't seen for a while. So glad we did it. Glad it allowed us to miss the Giants-Raiders game for most of it, which was just brutal. It's always fun to do these road trips and to tailgate and things along those lines, and hopefully we'll have a chance to do a couple more going forward.
Now, I'm thinking that piggybacking on what we talked about last week, I'm thinking my next road trip for a sporting event might be to Dallas to see the Syracuse Orange in the Final Four. This is our college basketball preview. So I have to ask you, what happened to your Maryland Terrapins against UConn the other night?
I don't know how ready I am for the college preview. I was hoping to have a little bit more. I was not expecting this meeting to go like this. What happened is the same thing that happens a lot with Maryland. We don't have a point guard, or we have a prospect, Roddy Peters, who is a top 10 point guard recruit, but he didn't start. Our starting point guard is hurt, and we went down 18 to UConn, and we cut it to 1. And we had 2 chances to win, and we couldn't do it. So this happens a lot with Maryland basketball. We get close. We're always tough. But eventually we have to start winning these games. And, you know, losing by UConn on a neutral field court is not a bad loss. But it is something that these are the kind of games that we have to win if we want to make the tournament, which we've missed the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think you're not missing Des Wells, the point guard. I think more importantly, you're missing Des Wells, the shooting guard. Because with him taking up all his time in the point guard position, it kind of makes it readily apparent that those shots that are going to those other players should be going to Wells.
Well, I'm not quite sure about that. Wells is the best scorer on the team. Wells is not the best shooter on the team. Jake Layman, I think, lays claim to that. But it's funny. They're a young team, but they're a relatively experienced team. There aren't really too many seniors. I can't actually think of any off the top of my head. And they're short a couple of recruits. But they're a team that's honestly probably a year away, depending on who goes in the draft. I think they're a tournament team. Look, one game doesn't change anything one way or the other. Not this early.
Agreed. I find it interesting that at big-time schools, and I include Maryland in those big-time schools, there are people that say that we're a year away. How is it that anybody in the NCAA basketball realm is a year away? Because these teams, I can understand it if you're a Major League Baseball team, even an NFL team where you're growing those players. But these guys, you're going to have probably 10 to 20% turnover next year, the same way as any other team does.
Wait. 10 to 20% turnover is 2 players.
Well, it could be your best 2 players.
Yeah, look, there's a good chance Wells will leave. There's a chance Layman will leave. But
that's what I'm saying. It's hard to grow year to year in the NCAA unless you're a Creighton or a Michigan State that repeatedly gets guys to stay 4 years or even 3 years. it's hard to say I'm taking umbrage with the concept of we're a year away, because if you look at Kentucky, and I'm not saying Maryland is Kentucky, but next year you're going to have 8 different players on that team. So
yeah,
it's really hard to ever say you're a year away in the NCAA basketball.
Wait. You know, you can't compare teams to Kentucky. That's unrealistic. They recruit players who they know are one and done. There's nobody in Maryland.
I'm comparing teams in general, given the fact that if you said Arizona is a year away this year, you know Aaron Gordon's not going to be there next year. So saying they're a year away means, okay, next year they'll be better, when in fact they're probably going to lose their best player next year.
Maryland's a little different in that regard, because they don't have a talent of an Aaron Gordon, a talent of an Andrew Harrison, of a Jabari Parker, of a Julius Randle, of an Andrew Wiggins. They don't have those talents.
Well, you just told me you're going to lose Dez Wells. So that's your
I'm saying there's a chance we lose Dez Wells. This is not a one.
I just find it hard in the NCAA to ever say year to year that we're 1 year away, or we're going to be much, much better next year, because the concept is you don't even know what your team looks like next year.
Well, Sean, you also follow a team that has that is top 10 annually. Remember, 3 years ago, we had 7 guys under scholarship. So we haven't had the depth. Now, after next year, we're back to a full team on the scholarship. And there's no excuse. There's no excuse this year for us not to make the tournament. I'm excited for next year. I'm interested to see this year. But my expectations were higher, to be perfectly honest, last year than they are for this year. Because last year we had Alex Len. Last year we had who we thought was a true point guard in Pishon Howard, who was, to quote a word we used 1,000 times this weekend, terrible. Since transferred to USC. We're not sure what we have. You know, next year we have four top 100 recruits coming in. Maryland has never had that before, so we're kind of interested to see what that's going to bring.
I think being excited about the future is a good idea. I mean, Syracuse is certainly excited about Chris McCullough. Granted, he was kicked off his prep team last night, but we're excited about our two top 25 recruits, the top 50 recruits. But I wouldn't say that if you're looking at Syracuse even last year as opposed to this year as opposed to next year, I can never say with good certainty I'm looking forward to next year. Because I don't know what players I knew Michael Carter Williams probably wasn't going to be there this year, but I also expected C.J. Fair not to be there this year. Now, next year, I'm looking at C.J. Fair is definitely gone, and I'm looking at maybe Jeremy Grant is gone as well, but I don't know if he is. So it's hard for me to say from year to year that this team can grow, because this team Mitch McGarry should not be at Michigan this year. He should have probably gone to the pros. But if you looked at it last year and looked at the beginning of Michigan's team last year at the beginning of the season, you would have said, wow, next year this team is going to be unbelievable because they're bringing back X, Y, and Z. Everybody but Trey Burke, they thought they were bringing back. Tim Hardaway Jr. should not have gone in the pros. But the fact is he had a good NCAA tournament, and thus he propelled himself to a first-round pick. But if you had asked him at the beginning of the year, next year should be better than this year, because they expected to have Hardaway. He just propelled himself to a first-round pick. I'm not saying this is a Maryland thing. I'm not saying this is a Michigan thing. I'm not saying this is a Syracuse thing. I'm saying that it's hard to say for any team that doesn't get guys to stay all 4 years, a la Creighton, it's hard that next year is definitely going to be better than this year. This team's going to grow.
That's
the same.
I understand your point, and I'm not really trying to debate it. Well, I guess I am a little bit. Because I think – I lied. I am a little bit. Because I think when you think about this, I think in your mind you're thinking of the teams that are constantly transitioning. Syracuse always has people leaving early. Kansas – Kentucky, you know, those top caliber teams. North Carolina for a while, although they've kind of fallen to the, you know, back a little bit. But yeah, no, I mean, I understand what you're saying. It is hard. And it also explains why in the last 5 years you've had, for all intents and purposes, one mid-major averaging every year. Starting
absolutely
with Georgia 7, Butler in 08 and 09, or whatever the years were, I apologize, DCU. Last year, Wichita State put up the best performance against Louisville, but was the better team for 37 of the 40 minutes against Louisville. So because of that, you're seeing more parity, but you're also seeing a lower caliber basketball.
Absolutely. I think that you are spot on with that analysis, that every year you're going to see a team that has senior leadership go far in the tournament for that very reason. Gonzaga was another good example earlier on, in Baylor to a degree. I absolutely agree. And the quality of basketball is not as good. I am very eager to see Kentucky put out five freshmen on the court together. That I just want to see how sloppy the basketball gets played. Because they have five great talents. The question is, like you said, will they grow, and do they even have time to grow? So it's an interesting conundrum.
Well, I mean, we talked about that with Kentucky last year. 2 years ago, they had, even when they were freshmen, there was leadership with Davis and especially Kid Gilchrist, and they won the title.
Yeah, they also had Lamb. They also had Lamb, didn't they? Dorian Lamb?
I don't remember. They had a couple other ones. They had Daniel Orton.
They had at least one senior on that team. I know that for certain. But last year they didn't have that.
Yeah, and last year they lost in the NIT to Robert Morris.
Right.
Which was quite funny for anyone outside of the Bluegrass State.
And even those people in the Bluegrass State that go to Louisville.
That is true.
I get what you're saying. I think that is absolutely spot-on analysis. Congratulations. Well done. It's an interesting year for college basketball because I believe that there will be so many freshmen that are one and done. And perhaps there may be freshmen and sophomores that are gone early, very early. The NBA draft, I think half of it, if not three-quarters of it, will be underclassmen. And that's normal, but not as many freshmen. I mean, looking at Wiggins in Kansas, Randall, the Harrisons, Cauley Stein, who's not a freshman but sophomore, Embiid, pretty much the starting five of Kentucky, Aaron Gordon. Who am I missing? I'm missing one other freshman. But
Wiggins?
So would you like to postpone our college basketball preview until next week?
No, I'll look. I'm ready to – you know what? I'll do it if you want to move forward with it. I'm good to go.
All right. Well, I'm ready to talk about Kentucky and whether they go 40-0. Do you think that they go all the way?
Probably not. I think the team 2 years ago, I don't want to say it was once in a generation, but I have a lot of trouble seeing them at that level. I don't know what the leadership is of this Kentucky team. I know that Kyle Perry is downplaying them already. They're certainly not going 40-0, even though they're in a relatively weak conference. Ole Miss won it last year, but, what are you looking at here? You're looking at Tennessee with Quanzo Martin as the coach. Good, Florida is always pretty solid. But
I think Florida is a top 10 team this year. I think they're beyond solid. I think they're a top 10 team.
Well,
so
Donovan does a heck of a job.
Top 10 from the SEC.
Yeah, Donovan does a heck of a job there. It's a team that obviously, is never the top priority that is, as opposed to football. They do get big recruits. They've won two titles. They've been in the Final Four, Final Eight, I want to say 2 or 3 years in a row. They have Chris Walker. They have Kenny Boynton still. Or actually, Kenny Boynton, I think, is gone.
He's gone. He only lasted 12 years there.
Yeah, felt like it. You know, they have Patrick Young. It's a good team. They're the team that goes 25-8. They're the 4 seed. And they're the team that nobody ever wants to play in the tournament.
Yep. I believe Patrick Young actually left. I think he's gone as well.
No, I think he's still there. I think he's actually a senior.
Oh, I thought he had left early. I'll have to check up. Anyway, so you don't think they go 40-0. They are a number one seed, yes, by the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of hard to go against that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I absolutely agree. One second. Let me check on this. I thought so. Walker is not eligible to the second semester. Let me check on Patrick. I have all the rosters. I actually did some research on this today, which is scary.
Usually you had more time than I did.
I'm not so sure about that today. Anyway, okay, so that's who we got going. Wait, I got right here. Florida. You're right. They still have Patrick. They lost Mike Rosario, Eric Murphy, and Kenny Boynton. So you are correct. That's two. Two in a row today.
That's a lot of talent to lose on a single team.
It is. Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, you lose talent here, there, everywhere, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Again, these are the top 10 to 15 teams that are constantly – there's a constant flow. First of all, Rosario was a fifth-year senior. Boynton had to have been a senior. Who's the other one? Is it Irwin Walker we're talking about? Who's the other name that left?
Hold on. I had it. Wait one second. Mike was Eric Murphy.
Okay.
Eric Murphy, who I believe also was a senior. So they lost three seniors. Well, Florida keeps their players. I mean, even if it's 2 or 3 years, they generally keep their players.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to pick – I generally put these in, like, top four teams, like different different scales. So in my Kentucky bracket of top four, I have Kentucky, Louisville, Michigan State, and Kansas.
Okay, so we're doing our one season.
Top four. I'm not saying these are the final four. I'm just saying start of the season, these are my top four teams in the NCAA, these four. Kentucky, Louisville, Michigan State, and Kansas. And they're all in different conferences, which certainly helps. I like Louisville a lot. They're bringing back a lot. They're bringing back Russ Smith, Luke Hancock, Wayne Blackshear, Montrose Harrell. I mean, they got a lot of talent from that championship team of last year. They didn't lose very much, except for Deng in the middle. And Rick Pitino may be the best coach in basketball. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, actually, for college basketball this year. And if you've watched any of the games so far, and you watch UConn, I wonder if this is the same. The refs have been calling and have been told to call that hand check rule very, very hard. So there's going to be a lot more fouls this year than there ever have been before. Did you see that in the UConn Maryland game?
It was pretty obvious. They are calling the game a little bit tighter. Yeah, it's kind of hard not to like Louisville. I mean, you mentioned the guys. They lose, obviously, they're kind of the heart and soul of the team in Peyton Siva. But they get an All-American JUCO and Chris Jones coming back. It's hard to bet against them. But
it's not hard to bet on Kevin Ware.
No. It's not hard to root for Kevin Ware either. Obviously coming off the brutal leg injury. And, you know, I'm thinking
those new rules would affect Louisville more than any other team due to the fact that they press as much as they do.
Press so much? Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. know, they're extraordinarily talented. They're going to be, they're, you know, they're a top five team. Oh, excuse me. And, you know, there it is a shame, too bad not in the ACC this year, because, man, that ACC is packed. But they'll kind of cruise through their conference. And, you know, most and the sad part is the conferences don't mean too much in college basketball in a lot of ways. You're still going to have your top five, or, you know, even in bad years, you still have three or four, you know, two or three come from the Pac-10 a couple years ago. Pac-10 had a bad run for several years. It should be better this year. The ACC always gets five. The Big East always feels like it gets 15, although the Big East barely exists at this point.
No, the Big East in basketball actually does exist.
That is, oh, in basketball it does. In football, not so much. But, yeah, the Big East.
Or
the Catholic, yeah, the Catholic, yes, the Catholic Conference. You know, that'll be led by McDermott in Creighton. You know, you talk about a team. Now, the problem is I don't know how much talent he really has around him, unfortunately. You know, it's him and Grant Gibbs, and that's really about it that I know of. You know, they're a good team. They're a Sweet 16 caliber team, but I'm not sure they're anything more than that. And then you kind of look, I mean, just to kind of jump around the conference a little bit, Marquette somehow always finds a way to have a good season as a Sweet 16 kind of team. You know, they're that 9 seed nobody ever wants to play. No, it's Villanova's kind of been down, but it looks like they should be a little bit better this year. Xavier's always solid. You know, it even
Georgetown
in first year.
Georgetown gets Josh Smith.
Georgetown does get Josh. I forgot about Josh Smith. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do lose on a quarter. May have been the best player in college basketball last year.
Right. Well, I mean, as we said, players leave. You can't build necessarily around them. But Josh Smith is a good substitute for losing Otto Porter. That conference with Xavier as well in that conference now due to being Catholic, I guess, moving from the A-10. So there's a lot of good stuff coming out of the Catholic 8/Big East, and you can find that all on the Fox Sports Network with Bill Rafferty and Gus Johnson, which should be an interesting pairing for the Big East season.
Onions. Yeah.
What?
Or my favorite, Sorrentine from the parking lot. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Onions.
Sorrentine
yeah.
from
so
the parking lot.
So moving on to the Big Ten, right? With that spoken to, moving on to the Big Ten, I think there's two teams and then there's a lot under it. I think the two teams are Michigan and Michigan State. And I think you have a lot of those two teams to set themselves apart from everybody else. So I'm sorry, not Michigan. Sorry, there are three teams, Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And then there's a little bit of a block, and then Indiana, and then there's more under there. So I like the return of Gary Harris to Michigan State. I think they are in that top four of that group. Keith Appling, Adrian Payne. They only lost one rotation player out of that entire team. So I'm going them winning the Big Ten, being very good. And Tom Izzo, he had five or six great coaches. I would say great coaches in college basketball. He's right up there.
I think you know my feelings on Izzo. I think Izzo's the best coach in the country. Just like I find it very difficult to imagine, and I say this half jokingly but half seriously, and I've spoken with Sean about this before. I find it very difficult to figure out why people go to Syracuse to play.
It's for the cars.
What'd you say?
It's for the cars.
I thought it's for the weather.
No, we give them a car each time they step on campus. Didn't you know that?
My fault. I find it really hard to imagine how a school that is really a second-tier school within its own state has become this absolute powerhouse over the last 15 years. I find, you know, I've never been to East Lansing. I have no idea how nice a school it is. But I just can't imagine in the middle of the winter it's that much fun of a school to attend. And, you know, they have been to, what, 8 Final Fours, 7 Final Fours. They've won a title. You know, the key to that team is Adrian Payne. He's so big, and he's just an awkward player to play against. But, you know, for the team really to get to that next level, I think it's him. You know, he's a senior. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be this time. It's got to be his time. You know, Gary Harris is a potential All-American. You know, Appling, if I remember correctly, broke Maryland's heart a couple of years ago with a three-pointer. And, you know, they're very good. Michigan is very good. As you said, Indiana, Tom Cream has done a wonderful, wonderful job. But, you know, having lost both Oladipo and Zeller, you're looking at a step back. Ohio State, you know, they have...
They lost one player. They lost to Sean Thomas, who happens to be their best player. But that's all they're
lost. Can they replace the scoring? You know, it's going to pretty much have to be a Quentin Ross. You know, that's really who it has to be.
Yep.
And Aaron Kraft is still the, you know, again, a guy who feels like he's been there for 20 years, and I think he's only a junior, actually. You know, that guy who averages 6 points, but like 8 assists and 4 steals, and, you know, just a really great set of player and a great clutch shooter, a guy who actually won them their Sweet 16 game against Iowa State last year.
You know, Seth, it always happens, and every year I do this, and I always underestimate one team. And I did it again. Absolutely. And I did it again because they're in that same class. They may be better than Michigan. They're right under Ohio State to me. I think it goes Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin. Oh, sorry. Michigan State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan. I don't know why I always overlook Bo Ryan, but he always puts together a great team. And this year should be no different. I mean, I got them in the top 15.
Yeah, they're led by Ben Brust. But to be perfectly honest, you know, and Sam Decker, who was, I think, a freshman, Big Ten All-American. I'm not sure if it's All-American. Yeah, freshman All-American as a whole. But they're very forgettable because, in a lot of ways, of how they play. You know, they play the old-school 50s, 60s basketball, you know, very incredibly fundamentally sound. Very difficult team in a one, you know, very difficult team to play against. And that's why I think pretty much since Bo Ryan's become their coach, I believe they've never been lower than the top three or the top four in the Big Ten.
Top four. Okay. But again, this is a team, much like Louisville, where I see if there is a team that's going to be hurt by these new rules, this is that team. Because they are a defense-oriented team. I mean, they are. We're going to play in the 60s. We're going to play in the low 70s. We're not going to get into a shootout with you. So if that's the way that they're going to play, the same way. Well, Louisville is a pressing team, but same concept is tight D on you all times, not zone D, but tight man D. You're going to have problems with these new rules.
Yeah, I think the new rules are going to hit the Big Ten more than any other conference. What I've said in the past, and I've meant it sincerely, is I've felt that the Big Ten has been vastly overrated in football and vastly underrated in basketball. And, you know, this more detailed, more disciplined foul calling will impact the Big Ten more than any other conference.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to the ACC, which may have the most talent in all of college basketball for one conference. I mean, you got Duke, you got North Carolina, you got Syracuse and Pitt. You got Virginia, who is another team that I tend to overlook. Virginia looks really good this year with Justin Anderson and Joe Harris. I mean, I don't even know who's coaching Virginia these days.
It's Bennett, the old coach from Washington State.
Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I said.
Not the singer, Tony Bennett.
No, he decided to leave part in San Francisco.
Yeah. So, no, but I've always overlooked them, and they will be in the at least for me in the top five of that conference, and they look good. I mean, Syracuse will probably be in the top 15 as well, and I think of all the teams that will fare better because of those rules, Syracuse is one of those teams. They like to drive to the basket, and when you play zone defense, you're not so much on those players. So you're not going to get those tic-tacky fouls.
Well, I think as opposed to in prior years, I think the ACC is a little bit more top-heavy than they have been previously. I think the bottom of the conference is relatively weak. Virginia Tech loses Eric Green, who is the leading scorer. They don't have too much. Wake Forest has been terrible the last couple of years. I'm not quite sure how Jeff Bezdek still has a job. Clemson takes a step back. You know, Clemson is still very young. Florida State is not great.
I mean, you got lots of teams that are just Clemson. I mean, they're not great teams. But you're right. There's probably five or six really good schools. Then you got the Maryland's, which are like in the 25 to 40 range.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I'm sorry, Maryland like BC, where you have 25 to 40. And then you have the rest. So you're right. There are 14 teams in the Big East. In the ACC right now, next year there will be 16 teams. So it is just, you're right, they have to work on the parity from the bottom. And that's always been a problem with big conferences, you don't have it 1 through 16 or 1 through 14 because they beat the crap out of each other.
Well, the team that you mentioned, and I'm, you know, as anyone who knows me knows I'm not the world's biggest fan of this team, they've really underachieved, is University of North Carolina. I don't know if this team has just kind of run on recognition over the last couple of years, but, you know, last year they were carried by Bullock into the tournament. But nobody looked, they were not a great team by any stretch of the imagination. You know, P.J. Harrison, who was probably their best returning player, was arrested for a variety of things this year. We're not sure about their rookies. McAdoo, James Michael McAdoo has been a pretty big disappointment. Marcus Page hasn't been great. Strickland's a good shooter. You know, I've never been a big Roy Williams guy simply because he's always coached at teams where it's very easy to get talent. You know, he coached at Kansas and he coached at North Carolina, which are two of the five most prestigious, in my mind, universities when it comes to college basketball. You know, but his games, his actual X and O game, in-game play, never been a huge fan. And last year when they struggled, when the talent wasn't quite as there and there was more injuries, the team did struggle. I don't really see a huge improvement this year. They'll be a tournament team, but I don't put them in the top two or three in that conference.
Oh, no, I don't either. I put Duke number one, and we haven't even talked about Duke. Duke number one, Virginia number two, Syracuse number three, North Carolina number four. That's my rankings for this team.
Okay.
By Jabari Parker, who may be the best, how do I say this, best all-around freshman. May not have the ceiling that the Andrew Wiggins or the Julius Randle have, but I think as far as coming in and playing right now, he may be the best freshman out there.
He could be the most ready. You know, they've been preparing for this for the last, you know, Parker has been, you know, we've been hearing about Parker since his freshman year of high school. So this isn't a huge surprise. You know, it's not a huge surprise going to Duke. You know, people want to play for Krzyzewski. The big question is, what does Rodney Hood bring to the table here? Is he the replacement? Is he the swing man they need? You know, they have Quinn Cook at the point. Rashid Solomon is one of the best three-point shooters in the country. You know, they lose Curry. They lose Ryan Kelly. You know, they lose Mason Plumlee. I don't really know. It's funny. I don't know where to see them at this – where I see them at this point. I just don't. They're a young team. And, you know, a lot of these teams are in transition this year.
I agree with that, but I think the one thing that Duke has going in its favor is that there, in the ACC, there aren't very many really big men. Like,
no.
I mean, if you look at the dominant big men, they're not in the ACC. And granted, there aren't many dominant big men anymore in college basketball to begin with, but they're in the SEC at Kentucky. They're in the Big Ten or Big 12 in Kansas, or the Big Ten in with McGarry in Michigan. They're not in the ACC. The ACC, as far as big men is concerned, you're looking at 6'9", 6'10 guys. You're not looking at those seven-footers. So
you mean Raheem Christmas is not the answer?
He's 6'9". It doesn't matter whether he's the answer or not. He's only 6'9". I mean, the fact of the matter is there are no dominant big men, and Duke is as skilled around the perimeter as any team in the country. So if you're that skilled around the perimeter and you don't have a big man, it's okay in the ACC this year. I still think that they take the ACC because of that, because they have the most talent in the ACC.
Fair enough. You know, not a huge argument. You know, I would probably – I don't know if I would favor Syracuse over Duke at this point. I probably would go with Duke this year, Duke-Syracuse 1-2. 3-4-5, it's a mix of four teams, none of them particularly that impressive to me. Virginia has made a really nice upward climb. As you said, Justin Anderson, the five-star recruit that decommitted from Maryland, so – I remember him quite well. Akil Mitchell and the big player is actually I forget the name off the top of my head.
Joe Harris?
Thank you. Joe Harris, the three-point stud. So, I mean, I think I would probably have them three. I'm not sure. I forget who Notre Dame brings back. But Notre Dame is always going to be that team to me that goes 19-10, 20-11. They end up fifth or sixth in the conference, and they'll end up as a seven seed in the NCAA tournament and don't really scare anybody. We'll see what happens. You know, Notre Dame going to the ACC for basketball is obviously a positive. And, you know, for both the for the conference and for Notre Dame, as well. And, you know, we go from there.
Okay, so moving on to the Big 12.
Big 12, it's a two-team race. You have Kansas led by the two big freshmen, obviously Andrew Wiggins, Joel Embiid, who I think that's how you pronounce his name, who they're comparing in a lot of ways to Olajuwon, and a very, very raw Olajuwon, obviously. Plus, they still have Wayne Selden, or they actually have the freshman of Wayne Selden, excuse me. Then they have probably one of my Final Four teams, led by the best point guard in the country, Marcus Smart, in Oklahoma State. You know, LeBryant Nash, who should be a first-round pick next year, a couple other really solid role players. And, I mean, think about it. If Smart comes out, he's the number two pick in the draft.
If he comes out this year, he's probably number five, number six.
He may not even be the top point guard coming out. There's a point guard from Australia, Dante Exum, people are talking about. By the way, Michigan State up 10-0 on Kentucky right now. So,
okay.
You know, you have those top two, and then it's a huge step back. Baylor, Iowa State having, you know, a solid, really good season. You know, led by Fred Hoiberg, who I think will be. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in the pros pretty soon. Question is, when does Rick Barnes? Rick Barnes had enough in Texas?
I think the easy answer to that is when Steve Patterson says he's had enough. Being the new AD at Texas, I think. You have a similar situation with Mack Brown, don't you? I mean, granted, Mack Brown won a championship, but they've both been incredibly mediocre over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Texas should be the easiest place to recruit in the country. And I don't know what's happened there. You know, Rick Barnes has been there 10 years, 11 years. You know, it just kind of, you know, it's been, last year was the worst year they had. You know, Mick Cabungo never became the player they expected. You know, they They lost a couple transfers. It is a team in transition.
Yeah, I mean, and Steve Patterson, who just came over from Arizona State University, the new athletic director replacing DeLoss. I can't remember the guy's first name. I think it's David. But
DeLoss. I think it's Lalonde, I believe.
Oh, okay. they have the biggest budget, $120 million, which is, I think, is three times what I think it's six times what Creighton's is. It's an enormous budget. It's twice what Ohio State's is. So it's a matter of just getting the right guy, and who might that right guy be? At this point, he's going into the season. I believe this will be Rick Barnes's last year. I think this is Mac Brown's last year. Even if he wins a Big 12 title, I still think it's Mac Brown's last year. I think he rides off into the sunset. So it's a matter of, at that point, who they're going to get to replace him. But I think you're right. I think that there are two big teams, and then there's a huge drop from those two. So moving on to the to the WAC. The Pac-12. I'm sorry, Pac-12. Again, another conference where you have a great deal of mediocrity. You have two teams that are probably at the top, and then a whole lot of mediocrity after that. And those two teams are the Arizona Wildcats and UCLA Bruins.
I'll put Arizona up there. I don't have quite as much faith in UCLA. The Steve Alford pickup did not really overwhelm anybody. You know,
no, I agree with that, but I think they have enough talent on that team. I just think they need a new voice. But they are another team that's going to be hurt by these new rules because Alford plays the same type of defensive style that Ben Howland did. So kind of curious. I mean, we talked about it back then. What difference is this coach than the last coach? They play the same style, the same type of offense, same type of defense. Are you just hoping for a new voice? And I think that's the point at this juncture. But Arizona,
yeah,
with Aaron Gordon, is going to be high-flying in the Pac-12.
Yeah, Arizona should cruise to the conference. Colorado has been pretty solid, actually, although they lost Roberson this year. They have Spencer Didwell, who's a really nice player. A couple other guys, Xavier Johnson, was solid. And UConn. Now, Boyle is a guy who actually they're looking at it for bigger and better things potentially in the next couple of years to move up to one of the more higher level coaching positions. But again, it's a weak. It's still not a very strong conference. You know, Cal, they barely had three teams in the tournament last year. You know, California was one of them. They lose Alan Crabby. You know, Oregon made it last year, but they really kind of overachieved. It's just not a good conference.
And so we're going to go to, we talked about Louisville before, going to the AAC, which is the former Big East but not the new Big East. They pretty much have two top 25 teams, in my opinion, second being Memphis. And Josh Pastner, that's another guy. You talk about Tom Izzo and how he recruits. You talk about Jim Boeheim and how he recruits. How the hell do you get people to Memphis?
Memphis is a cool place.
I understand it's a cool place, but you got Louisville close. You got Kentucky close. If you go north, you have Ohio State. With Syracuse, you are basically, you're recruiting in the middle of nowhere. So it's New York, New Jersey. You get guys to come up. Michigan State, okay, you don't get into Michigan, you can go to Michigan State. Memphis is in the middle of so much, and yet he consistently gets top 50 recruits. He's going to be a guy that you have to watch on the radar going to one of those big colleges.
I'll tell you something. He's got to make a run first. I believe, I only think he's won one or two tournament games. I think he won his first one last year, actually. And I don't know. You know, he's been the wonder boy for many years now, and there has to be a team at some point. That team has to get to that, has to be a Sweet 16, Final 8, Final 4 team. I don't know if this is the team to do it. You know, from the perimeter, yeah, they're good, but, you know, they bring in Michael
Dixon. Transfers in Michael Dixon and Dave Pelham. So, I mean, I think this is – they have top 25 talent. Let's just see if they can put it all together. I mean, we got a couple of the WAC. We got Gonzaga. Now Kelly Olynyk's gone, but they seem to always come back with Mark Few as their coach. Out west, you got the Lobos in the Mountain West. I mean, the good thing about the NCAA is that there are so many conferences. You can pick and choose however you want. I know we only have 5 minutes left. So
I was going to say, are we going to 8 or 8:30? We're going to 8? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to go to 8. So
okay.
We only have 5 minutes left. I'll go first, and then I'll let Seth finish up. Yesterday was Monday was Veterans Day. There are a lot of pro athletes, past and present, including Bernard James, who just recently left Afghanistan for the Mavericks a couple of years back, Ted Williams, Bob Feller, a lot more in World War II than they've ever been today, Pat Tillman, that served their country, Mo Berg. We've talked a lot about athletes that served their country on the show. We said this on our website. We'll say it again. Thank you to all the past and present servicemen and servicewomen. We can have this show, as Michael Bloomberg said yesterday, so eloquently, or said at the Veterans Day Parade, so eloquently, it was yesterday, when somebody started cursing at him during the parade, and he was asked for comment. He goes, "Well, it's ironic," I'm paraphrasing, "it's ironic that on Veterans Day, the day that we celebrate being able to speak like that, he can speak like that. That's his right. And there is no other country in the world that allows you that right." So thank you very much to all of our servicemen and servicewomen. Without you, we're not here.
I'm not really going to try and follow that up because it seems kind of silly. You want to do our quick picks at the end?
Sure, I think that's a good idea. I'd like to take credit for the Tampa pick last night, by the way.
Well done. Did I take them or no?
What's that?
Did I take them also or no?
No, you didn't pick them. You weren't that ballsy.
Yeah. We should start writing this down. Oh, by the way, my final four picks are Kansas, Michigan State, Oklahoma State, and Louisville.
Okay, my final four picks are Kentucky, Louisville, Kansas, and you got to pick one that's not normal. I'll go with Duke. No, I can't go that way. Kentucky, Michigan State, Kansas, and I'm going to go with Arizona making it. Okay, we got less than a minute. So here we go. Quickly, the Thursday night game is Indianapolis at Tennessee. No sequel for the rest of the year. Indy for me, too. Kansas City, 9-0 at Denver, 8-1. I'm taking Denver.
Denver
as well. New England at Carolina on Monday night.
I like New England.
I will take Carolina, and that will be our one decisive pick again like we did last week. Okay, we got about 30 seconds left, so I will say goodbye. For Seth Kamens, this has been Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com. Seth and Sean Sports, both on Twitter and on Facebook. Join us, follow us. Thank you all for coming. Have a very nice week, and we'll check you out next week. See ya.
See ya.